Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, November 14th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, vehicle stolen in Eureka resulting in pursuit. 2nd District Representative Jared Huffman talks about recently released Epstein emails, Prop 50, and more in an interview with KPFA's Lauren Schmidt. And Ray Hamill with the sports report. So stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Yesterday, November 13th, at approximately 4:54 a.m., Eureka Police Department patrol officers responded to a report of an attempted vehicle theft of a Kia. The suspect fled the scene in a separate vehicle, also a Kia, which was later confirmed to have also been stolen out of Eureka and found abandoned later. KMUD News spoke to Laura Mantagna, Public Information Officer for the Eureka Police Department, for more information on the incident.
On November 13, 2025, at approximately 4:54 a.m., Eureka Police Department patrol officers responded to the 2900 block of G Street for a report of an attempted vehicle theft involving a Kia. The suspect fled in a separate vehicle after being confronted by the reporting party. While responding, officers observed two Kia vehicles speeding away from the vicinity and attempted a traffic stop on one of them. During the stop, occupants began switching seats and the vehicle fled from officers, leading to a pursuit through several residential streets. At two separate dead ends, the driver turned the vehicle towards officers, nearly striking them and damaging a patrol car to the point it was taken out of service. Due to increasingly dangerous driving, the pursuit was ultimately terminated. Shortly afterward, the suspect vehicle, later confirmed to be stolen out of Eureka, was found abandoned on the 700 block of N Street. A tracking canine was deployed, but was unable to locate the suspects. Around the same time, a separate victim reported interrupting another attempted theft of their Kia. Due to the integrity of this investigation, additional specific details are not being released at this time. If you have information, please contact EPD's Criminal Investigation Unit at 707-441-4300. As noted in a previous press release from March 2025, Kia and Hyundai models continue to be heavily targeted in vehicle thefts nationwide. Owners are encouraged to contact their dealership to determine whether their vehicle qualifies for a software update, ignition cylinder protector, or a steering wheel lock. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration recommends the following steps to reduce the risk of theft. Always remove keys from the vehicle. Keep windows closed and doors locked. Park in well-lit visible areas. Avoid leaving valuables in plain sight. Use audible or visible alarm systems. Consider immobilizing devices that prevent ignition bypass. Install a vehicle recovery system to help locate the car if stolen. Taking these precautions can significantly reduce the likelihood of becoming a victim of vehicle theft.
Kias and Hyundai vehicles are popular targets for car theft. Kias manufactured between 2011 and 2021, and Hyundai vehicles manufactured from 2016 to 2021, that specifically use a steel key instead of a key fob and push button start mechanism, lack engine immobilizers, making them easy targets. Kia offers a free anti-theft update for eligible vehicles made during that time, and Hyundai offers an upgrade as well. But for those not eligible, they provide a free steering wheel lock. The Eureka Police Department asks if you have any information on this incident to contact the Criminal Investigation Unit at 707-441-4300. Speaking to KPFA's Lauren Schmidt just before broadcast, North Coast's Congressman Jared Huffman discusses the newly released emails about Donald Trump's alleged knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking ring, changes to his newly reshaped district, and yesterday's House vote to reopen the government. In this interview,
it was a discouraging day in many respects, Lauren. I mean, I'm glad the government is reopened, at least temporarily, most of it. But I think because a few Senate Democrats peeled off and cut a deal that I think is a pretty lousy deal. They didn't get really anything. We lost some leverage in this healthcare debate that we have, I think, been doing a very good job of putting into the national conversation. And so we're not going to stop fighting for the ACA subsidies and other parts of the healthcare crisis that have to be addressed. But I think a moment of leverage may have been lost because of what these Senate Democrats did.
The stopgap funding bill keeps most agencies running through the end of January. But again, it leaves out the ACA tax credits. With the Senate promising a separate vote by mid-December, how will those Democrats be able to hold Republicans accountable to that vote and that discussion?
Well, that's going to be up to these Senate Democrats who think they got a meaningful promise from these guys. I think they got very little, and I'll be shocked if that vote, you know, advances a bill over to the House. But if they can pull that off, and I'm rooting for them, we will still have to fight to get Mike Johnson to give it a vote in the House, because he has been, you know, very, very cagey about that. And so it's just one of several reasons why I think it was a lousy deal that they cut. The other thing, Lauren, you may have heard, there's this very corrupt, outrageous midnight rider they put in there to make 8 Republican senators overnight millionaires because a grand jury looked through their phone records.
And that's related to January 6th. Can you speak a little more about that provision?
Yeah. So, look, there was a grand jury that was convened to look at a whole bunch of crimes relating to January 6th. In the course of that confidential grand jury proceeding, they issued subpoenas for the phone records of 8 Republican senators, not wiretaps, but just to see who they were calling in those critical days, because some of these guys were up to their neck in the fake elector scam, and Lindsey Graham was shaking down state election officials. So, you know, to me, it's pretty valid that a grand jury would want to look into that. But, you know, these guys are, you know, treating it like it's a political Pearl Harbor, like it's just outrageous, and they want the taxpayers to give them each $1 million. And that's what they put into that bill. That each of them would automatically get $500,000 for the subpoena that the grand jury issued and another $500,000 for the judge's protective order, making it all confidential so that they wouldn't know in real time. And it's just sort of this situation, Lauren. Well, you know, most of us are old enough to remember that if a senator snuck a rider into a bill at any other time in our history, to put money in the pocket of like a donor or a company in their district, it would be a scandal, maybe even a career-ending scandal. But things are so bad right now that they're just putting the money right into their own pocket.
Even with that provision, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer stated that this is a victory for Democrats, saying that Republicans will now have to own the problem of rising health insurance premiums. Do you agree with Schumer's assessment?
No, not entirely. Look, the victory for Democrats is that House Democrats stayed very unified, and that the overwhelming number of House and Senate Democrats did a great job fighting for health care. And we elevated the issue and we created a lot of political pressure. That I think we can feel very good about. But the way these 8 Democrats caved, no, I'm not happy with that. I'm not interested in spinning it into some happy talk.
And speaking of political pressure, there has been a seemingly explosive new development with additional emails being released by the House Oversight Committee, Adelita Grijalva being sworn in, which has given the bipartisan Epstein Files Transparency Act enough signatures. Can you talk about these developments, how members of Congress are reacting, and what the implications are for the country?
Yeah. Look, this is the scandal that Donald Trump cannot make go away. And it may be that the limits of his Teflon have been reached, because I think everyone who knows anything about this cover-up just has to believe. I mean, all of the evidence points to Donald Trump having some level of culpability and guilt in this sex trafficking scheme. Now, we don't know how deep into it he was, like with any of the victims, but all indications are that he knew or should have known about this in a big way. It seems rather obvious. And if you have nothing to hide, you don't do the stuff Donald Trump is doing to try to cover this up.
Is this something that Donald Trump could just dismiss as fake news or a, quote, Democratic hoax? Or could this really be the scandal that gets the bipartisan support for a future impeachment?
I don't know about impeachment, but I think the main thing is let's get bipartisan support for transparency for now. And we seem to have that. So I'm pleased. I think that really speaks to how powerfully this story resonates across political lines. I mean, this was just such a tragic scandal, and so deplorable in every way. And the fact that so many powerful people were in the thick of it, this is something, finally we found something, right, that an awful lot of Democrats and Republicans in our polarized country can agree on. Let's get to the bottom of this and let there be justice for whoever is involved.
And finally, Congressman Huffman, there's so much happening, but I'd be remiss not to mention that Proposition 50 just passed. And in closing, I'm hoping you can touch on what this means for District 2 and how you're planning on bringing representation to some of these areas that have historically had conservative leadership.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. So, look, I think it was a great election night. And yet I also know that I am taking on some deep red areas of the state that voted against Prop 50, that, you know, have voted with Donald Trump. And so I'm going to have to introduce myself to them and try to identify some things I can do to make life better in those parts of the state. That's what I'm going to begin to do. The conversations have begun. But, you know, when you do this, you got to approach it with a degree of humility. I am not going to just parachute into these areas and act like I already know everything or know what's best for them. I'm going to try to do some listening, but I'm eager to get started, and those conversations have begun.
Thank you again, Congressman Jared Huffman.
No, thanks, Lauren.
That was KPFA's current and KMUD's former news director, Lauren Schmidt. And next up, we have Ray Hamill with the sports report, where the South Fork Cubs are up to qualify for the 2025 North Coast Section football playoffs and more.
The South Fork Cubs are among the four Humboldt County teams to qualify for the 2025 North Coast Section football playoffs, which get underway this weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Cubs and the NCS playoffs in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school and college football news, why it was an historic week for the Ferndale High girls soccer team and the Arcata boys, who has been named league MVPs in HDNL volleyball, some college basketball, some youth football, and why this will be a big weekend in local high school cross country. But first up, the South Fork Cubs will get the opportunity to play for a second NCS title in 3 years after being included in the 8-player Division II playoff bracket. The Cubs, who saw their chances of an NCL 3 title slip away with an 86-60 loss to LC Allen last week, will open the NCS playoffs at home against Cornerstone Christian on Friday night at 7. The 6-3 Cubs receive the number 2 seed for the postseason tournament, and if they win on Friday, they will play for a championship against either LC Allen or Potter Valley next weekend. Ferndale, St. Bernard's and Fortuna have also qualified for the NCS postseason. Fresh off their incredible 10-0 regular season, the Ferndale Wildcats received the number 2 seed in Division 5 and will open at home against number 7 Arroyo on Saturday afternoon at 1. The Cats outscored their 10 regular season opponents 647-18, including a 48-6 win at Arcata last week. St. Bernard's also won last weekend, comfortably defeating Del Norte 35-21 in their regular season finale to clinch a co-championship in the Big Four for the second time in 3 seasons. The Crusaders, who closed out the regular season 9-1, received the number 1 seed in the NCS Division 6 playoff bracket and will open on Saturday afternoon against San Rafael at Crusader Field. That game is also set for 1 p.m. The Fortuna Huskies tied the Crusaders for the Big Four crown after also winning their regular season finale. The Huskies, who have been one of the hottest teams in the area for the past month and a half, defeated Eureka 39-0 4-0 in their final Big Four game and shared the conference title with the Crusaders. The Huskies won 6 of their final 7 games to close out 5-1 in conference and 6-4 overall, and they are seeded number 4 for the Division 6 postseason tournament, which sees them open at home against number 5 Petaluma on Friday night at 7. If both St. Bernard's and Fortuna win their playoff openers, they will face off in a semi-final showdown at St. Bernard's next week. In other HDNL games last week, McKinleyville defeated Hoopa 26-12 to close out the season 1-5 in the Little Four and 3-7 overall, while Hoopa dropped to 1-5 and 2-8. Arcata closed out 4-2 and 5-5 overall. In the Big Four, Del Norte closed out 2-4 and 5-5 overall, while Eureka closed out 0-6 and 1-9. Ukiah, Willits, and Potter Valley each also have qualified for the NCS playoffs. Ukiah, which defeated Annalee 42-13 last weekend, is 6-4 and received the number 5 seed for the Division 3 playoffs. The Wildcats will kick off the postseason at home against number 4 Antioch on Friday night. Willits, which defeated Fort Bragg 15-6 last weekend, received the number 3 seed in the Division 7 bracket and will open at home against number 6 Redwood Christian on Friday night, also at 7. Potter Valley, which was 4-3 in the regular season, will open at LC Allen, as mentioned earlier. In local college football, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods fell just short in its bid for a conference championship last week, losing 27-15 to American River at the Redwood Bowl. A win would have secured the conference crown and a playoff berth for the Corsairs, who closed out 3-7 overall and 3-2 in the National NorCal Conference. In local high school soccer, it was a great week for the Ferndale girls and Arcata boys teams. The Wildcats welcomed Del Norte to the Cream City for Wednesday afternoon's NCS Division 1 championship game and prevailed 2-0 with sisters Madison and Macy Hageman scoring the 2 goals. The section championship is the second in 3 years for the program, but a first ever in Division 1. The Cats, who also defeated St. Bernard's 1-0 in Saturday's semi-final, lost just 2 games all year and closed out 19-2-1, including 14 shutouts. The Arcata boys also had a good week and have qualified for a first ever NCS championship game in their Division 1 tournament. The Tigers, who are seeded number 6 in the bracket, defeated number 3 College Prep 1-0 in their quarterfinal last weekend and followed that with a 2-0 win at number 2 Fortuna in Wednesday night's semi-final. The Tigers will play at top-seeded Head Royce in Oakland in Saturday's championship game at 2 p.m. In local high school volleyball, Eureka's Tiara Mawaluga and St. Bernard's Britton Ikea have been named MVPs of the Big 5 and Little 4 respectively. Both MVPs are juniors. Mawaluga played a pivotal role in leading the Loggers to a first Big 5 championship in 7 years and a first NCS playoff win in around 2 decades, while Ikea led the Crusaders to an undefeated 9-0 record in the Little 4 on the way to a conference crown. In local college basketball, it's been a good start to the new season for College of the Redwoods sophomore Nora Talty. The CR guard, who is a former Arcata Tiger, has led the team in scoring in each of their first 3 games, including scoring 21 points in a 73-57 win over Modesto on Saturday, a victory that lifted the team to 2-1. The CR men also were in action over the weekend and fell 118-59 at City College of San Francisco to drop to 2-1. Both Cal Poly Humboldt teams will open their seasons this weekend. The men will travel to San Rafael for a pair of games, including their season opener against Western Washington on Friday night, while the Humboldt women will host Northwest Nazarene at Lumberjack Arena also on Friday night. In local youth football, it was a good week for the young Eel River Huskies, who won 6 Rivers Conference Championships at the AAA and Single A levels at Ferndale High School on Sunday, while the Northern Knights won the AA title. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, this weekend will be a big one for the HDNL Cross Country Runners. The league championships will take place at the Arcata Marsh on Saturday afternoon. And that's this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In state news, on America Recycles Day, turning in leftover paint is easy. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
This Saturday is America Recycles Day, and the nonprofit Paint Care is making it free and easy to get rid of the leftover paint in your garage or shed. According to the Product Stewardship Institute, 10% of the U.S. house paint purchased each year, about 80 million gallons, goes unused. Rather than throw it out, Californians can bring it to one of more than 800 drop-off sites around the state, many in hardware or paint stores. Terry Marsman is California Program Manager for Paint Care.
Recycling your leftover paint is easy and convenient. If you need to visit a drop-off site near you, please visit our website at paintcare.org. 99% of California residents live within 15 miles of a drop-off site, so there's likely one close to your home.
Many of the drop-off sites are available 7 days a week, year-round. The Paint Care program has collected more than 40 million gallons of leftover paint in California since its inception in 2012. Paint Care will even come pick it up for free if households or businesses have more than 100 gallons to donate. Marsman says the program also accepts sealers and varnishes. The full list of products they take is all on the Paint Care website.
We take latex paint, oil-based paint, and stain. As much of it that can be reused is reused. And the stuff that we cannot reuse is sent to be recycled or used for an alternative product.
The Paint Share program makes good quality leftover paint available through some reuse stores or household hazardous waste facilities. Other paint goes to a processing facility to become recycled content paint or to be put to some other beneficial use. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, state senators look at SNAP food aid in wake of shutdown, recent GOP legislation, KPFA's Kennedy Cuello reports.
State Senator Jesse Adeguin called for a Senate Human Services Committee hearing on SNAP, known in California as CalFresh, to discuss the effects of the federal shutdown and recent legislation. The hearing featured a panel on the effects of the government shutdown and another on the effects of House Resolution 1, also known as President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. H.R. 1 changes the qualifications for CalFresh, which will result in some people losing eligibility for the program. David Swanson Hollinger is the Chief Deputy Director for the California Department of Social Services. He emphasizes the importance of CalFresh to California residents.
It's the largest anti-hunger program in the state. It serves more than 5.5 million low-income individuals each month, which is about 3.3 million households across the state. And each month, California issues approximately $1.1 billion in federal CalFresh benefits to eligible Californians.
Two of Adeguin's constituents from Richmond talked about how important CalFresh is to them. Chris Navarro and his wife are former educators who have retired and now live on a fixed income. They said that when they realized that their Social Security wasn't enough to live comfortably and buy groceries, CalFresh was a lifeline for them. During the shutdown, they had to stretch their CalFresh money, rationing their food and even skipping meals because of fear that the money from October was going to have to last through the holidays. Despite the government shutdown ending, Navarro says the fear remains.
We still remember that when families and seniors need help, the federal government fought to block CalFresh and SNAP benefits. Well, remember that. Instead of protecting people, leaders allowed millions to go through unnecessary fear, hunger, and confusion. We always believed the government was supposed to be there to support its people, not make them suffer just to make political points. No one should have to wonder whether their country cares enough to make sure they can eat. We still don't know if our December benefits will come, and living in the constant uncertainty take a real mental and physical toll.
Under H.R. 1, eligibility requirements for CalFresh also change. Certain non-citizens will lose eligibility despite legal status, including refugees and human trafficking victims. Contra Costa County Human Services Director Marla Stewart brought up another change, the new work requirements.
SNAP requires that all able-bodied adults ages 18 to 54 without dependents either work, go to school, participate in work training, or volunteer for 20 hours per week. If they do not, they can only receive SNAP for 3 months every 36 months.
These changes to CalFresh will affect over 97% of recipients. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Housing is not just a problem in major cities in Nevada. It's also an issue in rural parts of the state, including tribal nations. Thousands of tribal members want to come back home, but there's not enough housing available at the moment. KNPR's Jimmy Romo visited two tribes to tour their newest housing developments.
On the Walker River Paiute Tribe Reservation, tribal officials and community members break ground on the highly anticipated water looping system. This water project was a decade in the making, as tribal members have been wanting to live on the reservation. And with no available housing, they can't. Gina Williams came back to the reservation a decade ago to become the housing director of the Walker River Paiute Tribe to build out the tribe. Instead, she was met with unavoidable infrastructure issues.
Sure, you're thinking, okay, you can build homes and do things and find out that that was not going to happen. There had to be a moratorium.
It wasn't until 2024 that the Walker River Paiute Tribe was approved for a $20 million grant. That funding was later taken away months after President Donald Trump took office. Walker River Paiute Tribe Chairwoman Melanie McFalls knew that although the tribe is trying to save funds, coming up with the water looping funding would be worth the investment for generations to come.
You know, it was kind of hard to give up $3 million just like that, but we had to, or else we would have lost the entire project.
40 miles north of the Walker River Paiute Tribe, Fallon Shoshone Tribe's Housing Program Development Manager Russell Dyer-Redner has seen how difficult getting housing can be.
It seemed like you're just basically waiting for somebody to die or something drastic to even have a chance at housing.
When Russell wanted to come back home to the reservation, he was told the same thing as many others. There's no housing available. To combat the lack of housing, the tribe is building a 22-unit housing project. These projects are adding housing to the reservation, but in small numbers with the help of federal funding. These federal funds come out of a big pot of money, where all 574 federal tribes nationwide are applying for a piece of the pot. And every year, the pot keeps shrinking.
There's always going to be a shortage. But if we can meet, you know, majority of our needs, we'll do our due diligence and hopefully people will be able to come back.
And that's what tribal leaders from reservations across the state want, to bring their members back home.
That was Jimmy Romo reporting. 5 Native Americans were among the 29 people named Bush Fellows this year. The Bush Foundation provides up to $150,000 over 2 years for fellows to build on their leadership skills. In the first of 5 profiles, Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire shares what an award-winning filmmaker plans to do.
Leah Hale has been with Twin Cities PBS for 13 years and has won regional Emmys for her work, including the films Reclaiming Sacred Tobacco and The People's Protectors. But the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate and Diné Nations artist feels she falls short in one area, technical expertise.
Learning about how to capture good quality audio, even when it comes to more of the technical side of editing, like color correcting and those types of things, that's something that I really want to learn more of because I get asked often to do mentoring to up-and-coming youth and storytellers.
Hale's grand vision is to create a worldwide network of indigenous filmmakers and artists who will share their cultural stories authentically and accurately. Hale also hopes to use her Bush Fellowship Award to build on her Dakota language skills. Her new film, Medicine Ball, is set for release next year. It looks at how basketball emerged out of boarding schools. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt, Ray Hamill, Suzanne Potter, Kennedy Cuello, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kma.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.